One hour down, three to go. Jake Volney with you guys here on The Fan. New offensive coordinator in the building. The words Art Modell Law being thrown around. And who better to bring in to break it all down than our Browns beat reporter, Daryl Ryder, brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Daryl, a slow day in the Cleveland sports world. No news, no other teams in action playing. Hey, it's just a nice, calm Tuesday, as always.
I love the NFL offseason, let me tell you.
Hey, I mean, right now, you have no complaints. There's no football being played, in theory, at least for the Cleveland Browns. And you still get to talk about them. We get constant news and things to work on, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Just another quiet offseason news day.
Obviously, the big news of the day, Browns hiring Tommy Rees as their offensive coordinator. Daryl, should there be any concerns with the team making an internal hire after going 3-14 last year?
Well, I just honestly don't think it matters who the coordinator is if you don't have a quarterback. So that's just kind of where I'm at. Tommy Rees is highly regarded around the NFL, thought to be an NFL head coach in waiting. Really just the last box for him to check is being a successful offensive coordinator. What this hire basically, at least from my standpoint, I think it telegraphs two things. One, Kevin Stefanski's taking the car keys back. It's going to be his offense again. And number two, they're preparing to draft a quarterback.
So then, Daryl, what does it look like? Trying to paint a picture, if you think it's Kevin Stefanski taking back the offense, because we're on the same page, of what it looks like with Kevin working alongside Tommy. Because obviously, it felt like Ken Dorsey had his hand in a lot of the offensive play calls and the way that the offensive playbook was constructed. Does Tommy Rees have little to no say, and it's just, hey, what little tidbits can you drop to help improve? Or is this, again, sort of a collaborative effort?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a collaborative effort, but my anticipation is they're going to go back to Kevin Stefanski's offense. I think that that's what this comes down to. And again, though, they got to find a quarterback that can run it. I mean, that's just, you know, nothing else matters this offseason. They've got to figure out a plan, both short-term and long-term, to solve this problem, to clean up the mess that they currently find themselves in.
Yeah, it would be a nice solution. We'd like to get there at some point here. Any idea what would have made Tommy Rees a better option here than a guy like Clint Kubiak? Was it the fact that Kevin Stefanski was taking over and feels like he has more control with a younger coach like Rees? Or is there something more beyond that would have made Tommy Rees a better candidate here?
Well, I mean, remember, Tommy Rees was a finalist for the North Carolina job before they hired some guy named Bill Belichick. Mike Vrabel was dropping hints that he wanted to bring Tommy Rees with him to New England, right? So yeah. I think it's a combination of keeping good people, good football brains within your building and giving them opportunities to grow. And then also on top of that, you know, with Clint Kubiak, you know, maybe – you know, play calling is an issue there, right? But for me, I think it came down to getting back to the principles of the offense that Kevin Stefanski runs, number one, and then also number two, Clint Kubiak's dad, it's pretty authored pretty much what Stefanski runs to begin with. And so for me, it came down to those two guys, you know, either Rees or Kubiak. That's just my own view on the situation. Obviously they talked to three other guys, but I felt like it was either going to be Kubiak or Rees getting this job, and ultimately it was Rees.
So now, obviously, with Tommy Rees having ties to Nick Saban's Alabama quarterback, Jalen Milroe, you think more of an option has nothing to do with it? The Browns could be considering that as a factor. Anything along those lines with Tommy Rees and Jalen Milroe's connection?
Yeah, I don't think that they're committed to any specific player here right now. They're just getting into their offseason evaluation mode of, you know, doing the autopsy on the train wreck and really getting to the nitty-gritty of everything that went wrong. So you'd anticipate there's so much of it, it's going to take a while. And then, you know, you go into your pre-draft prep, get ready, you go to the combine, go through that. Then you go through your visits and all that. So I don't think that they're committed to any singular player, and I don't think that they're hiring or promoting coaches based on potential draft picks.
Darryl Reiter, Browns beat reporter, with us here, and he's brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland Premier Jewelry Store. Darryl, Sam Darnold's performance last night in the wild card round, less than acceptable. 9 points now for Darnold in back-to-back games. Do you think it makes him more or less of a viable option? Obviously, you think the money would be less in the bigger games here, not playing so well, but also the play not up to snuff either. More or less an option for the Browns?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that I just think they got a lot to sort through this offseason. And, you know, I don't think Andrew Berry's sitting there right now with a lot of hard, specific answers. I think this is something that they're going to have to figure out as they, again, they work through their draft process, as they work into their free agency process, and you know, figure out who's going to be available to them. You know, I'm just of the belief there's no real great options out there right now. It's why I don't have a lot of faith and confidence from a football perspective that that this thing's going to be much better in 2025. I hope I'm dead wrong. I certainly was dead wrong about the results from this past season. I thought they'd be a playoff team, and they ended up winning three games. So
makes two of us.
It does happen. As much as I pride myself on being right, I have been wrong before. Won't be the last time, unfortunately. But I think that we got to, you know, Barry's got to get through the triage of the season and, you know, really start putting together those boards as we get closer to the new league year in the middle of March.
All right, Terrell, last one about the quarterbacks. Play GM for me right now. If you're trying to make the Browns fan base, if you're
by
trying to
the
get...
way, every quarterback question that I get asked this offseason, I'm just going to do shots on the air, I think.
That's going to be a... You'll be done by the
That's
end of the
That's going to be a very rough offseason for me.
Yeah. Probably spend more time, at least once or more, in the hospital by this time. Because there's a lot of questions that get fired off in some of these interviews, and I imagine...
As long as we don't end up with, like, the fifth episode of The Hangover...
I imagine,
which very well may happen.
The more shots you do, the less questions, less answer you probably give. And time wise,
if I end up with a tiger in the house, I'm going to get real worried.
That would be a strong concern.
It would be bad.
So play Andrew Berry, play GM for me. And if you wanted a majority of the Browns fan base happy, is there a single quarterback that's realistically available that you think could get you there?
No,
I don't think there's a problem.
I don't think there's any good options this offseason. They're all, the veterans are going to be available are all flawed. That's why they're available. So I don't think that there are any good options. It's up to Andrew Berry to pick the best of the worst. And then you draft a young player that you're, you know, counting on developing, right? Which. I don't know. The next quarterback this franchise develops will be the first. But, I mean, that's just, you know, where you're at. That's the most realistic approach you can have here is you sort through, you know, these guys and you figure out who can you squeeze the last good football out of, right? What you don't want to have happen is what happened to Sam Darnold and the Vikings, right? Outstanding regular season, win a ton of games. And then turn into a pumpkin come playoff time. Well, guess what happened? That happened to the Browns in 2023, right?
Yeah.
Joe Flacco, you know, was fantastic getting dusted off the couch, coming in here, you know, helping him get down the stretch, clinch the playoffs. Then the playoffs come, and he turned into a pumpkin at midnight, right? So, that's what you have to, you know, that's basically what you're picking from this offseason. There are no good options. There are no surefire. That guy's going to change the trajectory of the franchise. It's not there. What you have to hope is that Berry picks the best of the worst that's available, and then you know, they end up drafting the right kid that they can develop into something special.
Well, we'll be banking on that for the next 3 months and then probably following 3 years beyond it. So,
oh, I was going to say, I thought you were going to be banking on that for the next 30 years.
Yeah, no, probably that too.
I mean, we're 26 into it. What's another 30 years? So.
Yeah, just keep adding them on. You had the news, Daryl, obviously at Right or Wrong Fan on X. The city of Cleveland suing the Haslam Sports Group for attempting to move the Browns to Brook Park, trying to enact the Art Modell law. Do we know if the Haslams ever heard back on their request in their lawsuit, trying to figure out if it was actually reasonable to enact this law? Have we gotten that information?
Still waiting to be heard in U.S. District Court. So, I don't understand, and I specifically asked the city of Cleveland today why they are refusing to wait for that ruling. Then I also asked for clarification as to why they are trying to force a team that will have fulfilled the terms of a lease into signing another lease in a building that's currently deemed substandard, while also at the same time taking on and willing to take on another $500 million with a B dollars in stadium debt, which I know for a fact the city of Cleveland cannot afford. The city is basically broke. I know. I live in Cleveland. I drive on the roads. I know what the infrastructure is. It's not great. I know the condition of the school system. We just had to pass a levy because they ran out of money again. So, other than just creating a bunch of political theater and wasting money on billable hours, I'm struggling to understand where they're coming from. I'm trying to get clarification from them. And the Browns are trying to get clarification from federal court. So, we'll see how this thing plays out. But the city of Cleveland felt it necessary to sue in Cuyahoga County Court. I don't know how you can force a business to stay somewhere beyond the fulfillment of a lease. I don't know in what world in this country that actually exists, but the city of Cleveland says it does exist. You have to ask us permission to leave, you're going to have to pay us off. That then we'll give you permission to go to Brook Park. And then also, too, and if you're not willing to do that, well, then we have the right to try and find someone to buy the team from you to keep it in Cleveland. It's a very ambiguous law that was written back in 1996. I'm not a lawyer. I think that right now Cleveland is violating the spirit of the law. The Browns are staying in the market. You know, they're not moving to San Antonio or St. Louis or another market. They're literally going to move across the street from the city of limits here. But, Cleveland is threatened by the potential devastation of leaving all those parking lots that surround the stadium behind empty 10, 15 times a year. So, you know, the economic impact from that could be devastating. There's no question about it.
So, Daryl, I don't think anybody, at least personally that I know, I don't know that period right now is more educated on this. Do you think the city of Cleveland has a legitimate chance to win the case then?
I don't know. And I'm not ducking your question. Yeah. I honestly don't know. Again, like, I'm not a lawyer, but my interpretation of it is no, they shouldn't win it. The Browns will have fulfilled the lease at the end of 2028. The city will have paid off all the public debt related to this, to that stadium, by the end of 2028. Mm-hmm. It's a clean break, and that's what the Browns are looking to do. They're looking to go from one building into the next. Now, this Hail Mary attempt of, well, we'll build at Burke and whatever, but we don't know when that's going to happen. You know, okay, fine, but that's going to, you know, the politicians right now are hiding behind protecting taxpayers. Like, that was the big thing in the news release the city put out today. You know, they're taking strategic action to protect the taxpayer here by doing this, right? Well, let's say they build the Burke Dome, right? Let's say that this happens, right? Court says, too bad, Haslams, you're stuck in Cleveland. You have to do whatever the city tells you to do and stay, which, again, I don't know on what planet that should be legal. But let's just, for the sake of discussion, say that happens, right? And the city says, we're going to close Burke Lakefront Airport in 2036, and then we'll build a new dome there. So in 2040, we'll have a new dome ready for you. Meanwhile, they're going to have to spend $500 million minimum to fix up the existing stadium. And I'm not talking to do what the Browns really originally proposed to do to the thing, which cost north of $1 billion. I'm just talking basic maintenance, upkeep, you know, repair stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then build a dome. So so that's $500 million for temporary, keep the Browns in the stadium until you can build a new dome at Burke, right? So let's do the math here real quick. Let me get a piece of paper. I want to make sure I do this correct, okay? So that's $500 million, okay? So I was told that a dome on Burke would cost an additional $1 billion. So assuming, though, it can be built and opened by 2029. So that means the dome will cost around $3.3 billion, okay? The Browns have said they're not contributing any more than $1.2 billion, okay? So that means the taxpayers will be on the hook for $2.1 billion, okay? Which is $900 million more than Brook Park. Also, let's take about another $400 million in required infrastructure, because anyone that goes to that lakefront knows you can't get to Brook Lakefront Airport very easily, right? It's just like the stadium. You can't get there. So that's another $400 million. So if I've done the math, we haven't even done the cost increase to do the construction 10, 12 years from now, which is probably another $1 billion, okay? So now we are, let me do the math here real quick, 2.1 plus $500 million, that's 2.6, plus $400 million, that's $3 billion, plus that's $4 billion more in taxpayer money to renovate the existing stadium, to keep it open until they can build the Burke Dome and have that open around 2040. You tell me where the taxpayer savings is occurring here.
Yeah, I got nothing. That is not my strong suit, I know that.
And again, I realize I'm real shaky with math, and I didn't use a calculator here, but I'm pretty sure that $4 billion is a hell of a lot more than $1.2 billion.
Sure feels like it.
Okay, I'm asking you to double-check the math here, because I'm not real good at it, but like, just saying, like, that's the thing, and there's no plausible plan, and part of the Browns' urgency is that they are trying to control the costs. They wanted the new dome to cost $2.4 billion, and that's why there's urgency here to get this built on this timeline. But as long as these court cases continue, you risk sabotaging that timeline. So hopefully, federal court rules quickly, and then that decision can inform what takes place in county court with this lawsuit.
Daryl, always appreciate you. Good stuff out of you, and we'll talk soon. I'm in the same boat as Daryl, where it feels like, I don't know, how do you get there? A team serves out its lease, right? Put it in the form of a company. That if you serve out your lease, in what world are you required to then renew that release? That lease, like, how do you have to go back to it just by violation of the Art Modell law? Like, you can't force a team to play in the same building if they don't want to play there. Doesn't feel like something we can do. And if you want to get your thoughts in, 216-474-0092. I want to talk about a quarterback that could be, before we do. Larry had some thoughts on the stadium. What's going on, Larry?
Hey, how's it going, Jake? Yeah, real quick. I knew exactly you're talking quarterback, Jake. I could be wrong. You're talking Jalen Milroe.
Definitely am.
Basically, Reese was there in Alabama at the time, the quarterback, offensive coordinator, right? And I think that's where he's kind of leaning. Is that where it is, Jake?
That's where we're going.
That's what I thought. Real quick, now, the stadium now, Jake, the Modell rule. Basically, it's based on moving the team out of the state of Ohio, right? That's what the purpose of. They're going right down the street. They're still staying in Ohio. And another thing, too, Jake, about money, how much money is the state of Ohio going to help fund the stadium for the Brownies there if they decide to do that, the city? And plus on it, too, Jake, Daryl mentioned about the school system. They passed levies, okay?
Yeah.
They'll still be in the red by $71 million.
Ugh. It's not a good sign, not a good look. And Larry, I appreciate the call. I'm not from... I'm from the Cleveland area, but I'm not from the actual city of Cleveland, right? I don't live in the boundaries of Cleveland, but yeah, like that seems, this all seems like a whole attack on something that's not going to have a whole lot of impact in hopes that the city of Cleveland gets a nice paycheck at the end of it. That's what it feels like. That's what Daryl has essentially conveyed, and that's I'm in the same boat. At the end of the day, that's what it feels like, because this team is trying to move 15 minutes down the road. 15 minutes down the road. Not that big of a deal. A ton of teams have moved stadiums and moved, quote-unquote, out of their city into a surrounding suburb or something equivalent, and there's never this big of a problem. It's just the wonderful city of Cleveland that we run into where it somehow has to become problematic, right? We can't just move on with the Browns going to play somewhere else, because apparently there's significant impacts coming down financially for the city, the same city who, you know, you had problems keeping together the West 6 tailgate. You had your problems only having the stadium active for 15 days of the year, right? Like, how big of a financial impact can it really have? People still go down to the bars, and they'll still go to the restaurants on game days. Nothing of that is going to change, right? You don't get the crowd that's there, but you'll still get a crowd who are Browns fans who want to watch the game. That's exactly how that works. And that is the whole thing that happens there. You'll still have something, and then, oh, if not, and it is a big impact, well, City Cleveland should find something else other than one sports team to fund the entire city. That would probably be helpful. All right, but Larry did steal the thunder there. It is the quarterback I was referring to earlier that could be on their way to Cleveland with Tommy Rees now in his offensive coordinator. And I do think it gets a little interesting, is Jalen Milroe. Now, I don't want to break this down from a Jalen Milroe standpoint. If you want to hear that, we did him on our quarterback big board at 740, Odyssey Rewind feature. You can go back and listen. This does, though, open the door. And even if it's not something they had talked about going in, it certainly has to be something that they're going to talk about in some capacity, right? One of the quarterbacks that you're going to have an opportunity to draft at some point was coached by your offensive coordinator, found success under your offensive coordinator. I'm sure Tommy Rees has some good words to say about Jalen Milroe. I'm sure he probably has some, I don't want to say negative words, some constructive words to say about Milroe as well. But he has a sense of who he is as a person, who he is as a player, and can either go to bat or not for him. And typically, if you had him there and you were winning games with Alabama, I imagine you have positive things to say. So whether or not that's where the Browns decide to go and they think that there's elite talent found there, I'm sure your offensive coordinator is going to put in a good word. And if you're looking for a way that you could get quarterbacks to mesh, right, in the same way that you tried with Ken Dorsey and Deshaun Watson and it came out to be a failure, I think it would require a little bit of a revamping of the classic Kevin Stefanski offense to get Milroe here and for it to work. There's probably not a better person for that meshing than a guy who already coached him. And Tommy Rees. That's the guy made in, that's the pairing made in heaven if you're going to make it work. Which again, I think is probably a less likely scenario that the Browns wait and go there, but it puts it back on the table that the Browns could trade back. And maybe they go and get a first-round pick a little bit later and also find themselves trading backup to draft Jalen Milroe, or maybe they find out he'll fall to them in the second round and they're able to take him there. I think that is now on the board as well, where I would have previously told you that Jalen Milroe was not going to be here and there was no chance Kevin Stefanski went there and that was the guy that the Browns took. I think with Tommy Rees as your OC, that changes a little bit and he's back in the mix. I think he's a consideration for the job. With that being said, I don't know that there's a quarterback that's going to make everyone happy, and I want to know whether or not you think there is. 216-474-0092. We'll get to your calls. It's Jake Volnick with you guys right here on 92.3 The Fan. And the more and more I think about it, I stare and look and try to find myself a quarterback for the Browns that is just going to put you in a position to be like, hey, at least you're making people happy, right? This is the clear and obvious favorite. This is the guy that you go get. But I think for a big reason why that isn't the case is that I'm sitting here at 7:40 with you guys every night. Odyssey Rewind feature, go back and listen. I am sitting here with you guys at 7:40 every night and doing a quarterback big board. Like, there is just no clear option. Right? Daryl, who joined us at 8, will tell you that it's because the entire options and everything available to you, the entire field is garbage and there's not a good one. I think it's a little bit of a mixing between, yeah, the field isn't that great. There is a reason why veterans are available as quarterbacks. I think the other half of that, though, is that even when there's clearly a veteran option out there, right, when a team needs to go out and sign a veteran, there's usually a guy near the top who you can point to and say, well, yeah, that's the guy that you want to go get. I think we're in a year where a lot of those guys are of similar value, of similar production. And it's, hey, this guy could be good, but does he fit your system? Hey, this guy could be good. Is he going to cost too much money? There's a million options out there for the Browns to go out and get. It's just having to identify who's going to be available, what they can do in your offense, and going and actually selecting the right one. The problem is, no matter who you pick, I don't think Browns fans are going to be happy. I don't know that there are so many options right now that you could go to, right? If you like Shedeur Sanders versus you like Cam Ward in the draft. Maybe you don't like drafting a first-round quarterback at all, and you've identified a guy later that you want. Maybe you still want Jameis Winston to come back. I think that ship has sailed, but maybe some of you are still on that boat. And then you go down the list of other people you could have. Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, Sam Darnold, right? J.J. McCarthy. Toss out any other name you want. Kirk Cousins. It doesn't matter. There's so many options that feel like they're legitimately in play that you're going to split up how many people are on the side of one of these guys. Right? You're going to split up the fan base between, hey, I want Kirk Cousins. And Joe Schmo over there might want Justin Fields. And then somebody else is going to want Trey Lance. There's so many options that it's impossible to please the majority of the fan base. The simple math in the numbers line up to the point where you're not going to be able to pick it. Right? There's no chance that 50% of the fan base is riding with one guy. And I think for that reason, you find yourself in a weird scenario. Because no matter what you do, if you're Andrew Berry or Kevin Stefanski, and this thing goes off the rails, whoever you sign this year doesn't pan out, there's going to be more of the people that support you and your team saying, I told you that wasn't the guy you wanted to go get. Right? When the Jaguars select Trevor Lawrence at 1, and I point to that because he was a clear and obvious number one pick. There's nobody sitting there when Trevor Lawrence is now struggling going, well, I told you not to draft the guy. 98% of the Jaguars fan base is like, yeah, no, that was the guy that we wanted to draft. It's just not working out. You don't have that same kind of pressure. I mean, as a head coach, they've already moved on from like 3 at this point. But in general, ownership, front office, everybody there don't have that same attempt at pressure because it was clear the guy to draft was Trevor Lawrence in their scenario. For the Browns, it's not even, you're picking it 2, and if one guy goes, it's not even clear that you should take the other one. It's not even clear that you should take either guy within the top 2. Right? No matter what you do with your draft pick, it could be wrong. And no matter what you do in free agency, it could be wrong to more than 75% of the people supporting you. And even if you have you go out and you have a good season and then somebody else has a better one, that'll be a conversation in too. Well, I told you to go get this guy. The Browns identified somebody that worked, but they didn't identify the top guy that could help you out. So I think when you go back and you're Andrew Berry and you're like, man, I just need to get this thing right. They're always going to go off purely a football perspective, but there at least for him is no public pressure on you have to go get this guy, right? Because if you evaluate the guy that the entire fan base wants you to go out and get and you say, oof, not that guy, he's not going to work here. And that's who they want. There's that added pressure, but I view this as almost a positive for the Browns. Because, yes, if things flop, like I said, there will be people that are screaming from the heavens that they were right and their guy would have been the better mix and everything that could have possibly gone their way would have gone their way because Sam Darnold, you could have got him for cheaper in whatever scenario you want to throw out there. Oh, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, that's going to happen if it fails. If you're the Browns and you're Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski right now, failure is not an option. The thing not working out this year, not getting a quarterback who wins you 9+ games, is not an option. That is a surrendering of your job and pushing it off to whoever else is looking to get in there and take it over. It is. It is a surrendering of your job to lose those games. So that is not on the table. For them, it's identify the best player, get him in here, and try to win some games. So you can forget about making everybody happy because it's just not going to happen. And if there's a scenario where a lot of people feel that player X would have been better, well, you're not going to have to worry about it because you're probably not going to be dealing with the Browns anymore. You don't have to worry about what the fan base says now. Get in there, go get your quarterback, and whatever guy that is, make sure that he works. And you know what? There will be a small percentage saying, man, I told you that was the right move. I could be an NFL GM, and a lot of people being like, huh. Maybe Andrew Berry really can evaluate talent. Maybe Kevin Stefanski really can develop quarterbacks and turn them into something. Or take a veteran quarterback, repurpose him, and make it work. That's what you have to bank on. There was a conversation this morning about a potential quarterback that could be coming to Cleveland that nobody else had really thrown on the table previously. And it caught my attention because the name's a little out there. It wasn't the one that I expected, but it was interesting. This coming from Ryan Wilson when he joined Ken and Anthony this morning about a potential quarterback that it would require a trade, but that he could see coming to Cleveland.
Would you, as the Cleveland Browns, trade the second-round pick for Kyler Murray? He moved down to 16, I think. So 16 for Kyler Murray and number two.
I don't get anything else. I just get Kyler Murray and the 16th pick.
Yeah, you can work out the details if you want a couple fourth-round picks and some hamburgers. But, I mean, the main point is getting a quarterback that you feel a little better about than maybe what's in the draft class.
Kyler definitely has talent, and he's better than anything we've had since Baker. But, you know, does that work over the full course of a season? His size? What does it look like in the cold?
I don't even think it's for the front. I don't think the fans would have a good time with that.
The fans wouldn't have a good time with anything. I think that's what we're finding out. There's nothing that the fan is going to have an enjoyable time with. I can agree with Ken and Anthony to agree. Like, there's not a whole lot there. Okay, like, Kyler, bringing him in, I think probably would be your most talented option, right? There's not much more that you can say than that. Like, he is going to be one of the more talented options. But do you really want an undersized quarterback who has to move out of the pocket, has to be agile, can't really throw behind his offensive line all that well because he is undersized, he's too small. Doesn't really feel like that works with Kevin Stefanski's offense either. It's an interesting proposal. I like that type of guy being thrown out as, hey, let's just not look at this thing bare bones the way that a lot of other people are. Right? Don't look at just the free agents. Don't look at just the guys coming out of the draft. Consider trade potential. People are going to want to make draft picks. Maybe they're willing to give up their quarterback to get into the top of the draft to then go ahead and throw Cleveland somebody that could be available. And I think the Cardinals are right up there among those teams because they haven't found the success. This year should have been good for them, and it really wasn't. They should have felt pretty confident about a chance to compete in the West, and they weren't in a position to do it at all. That team struggled mightily, and maybe they are willing to give up Kyler. Maybe he does make the Browns better, but the whole purpose is that you can go out and maybe consider some of these quarterbacks who aren't openly on the market. Does the number two pick really carry that much weight? I think that's a question we have to ask ourselves, is how much weight that pick actually carries. Are you evaluating it because you want Travis Hunter, or are you evaluating it because you want one of the quarterbacks, and how much stock do teams put in that? I don't know that there's a ton of teams in that scenario outside of the Cardinals, right? You might be able to persuade the Colts, but I highly doubt it for a guy like Anthony Richardson. I doubt the Jaguars would want to move on from Trevor Lawrence, or maybe that the Browns would even want to pursue that. But aside from that, I mean, I don't think a guy like Dak Prescott's throwing you that name. I don't think veteran quarterbacks like Geno Smith or Matthew Stafford do it for you. I'm just rolling down the list trying to find if there's a scenario with a guy that I really like. Some of you would probably say Baker Mayfield, right? Throw him back. Put him back in the mix. You go give the Bucs the number two pick and you take Baker. I don't think that's happening either. And those are really the only scenarios you look at and you walk yourself into. Right, unless you like Bryce Young, those are the scenarios you put yourself into. But hey, it's another option on the board. And honestly, it gets you a quarterback that's probably going to be better than a Shedeur Sanders, probably going to be better than a Cam Ward, at least in the first couple of years. I mean, it's something you have to consider. I just don't think it makes Browns fans happy, but I think that's the problem. Nothing at quarterback is going to make Browns fans happy. 216-474-0092. Is there a realistic quarterback that puts everybody in a good mood after they get signed? And at 9 o'clock, get a grip, as we always do. It is Jake Volnick, and I'm with you here, right here until 11 on 92.3 The Fan.